some of the stars through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Rated G Radio. It just seems like we're here just not that long ago, and we were. We were doing the show last night with Dr. Annie Ulrich. She was on to take your calls and talk about the February energy update. She had some interesting things to say about February 22nd, so I'm going to encourage you to go back and take a listen to the on-demand portion of the show. Or, of course, if you're listening on your Apple iTunes podcast of the show, you can just fast-forward or rewind anytime you want and go back and check that out. We're going to have Dr. Frank Cilio on the show in just a couple of moments. He's going to be talking about his children's books, also his career as a psychologist, and so much more. I think you're really going to enjoy hearing from him and the messages that he's sharing with the children of the world today. Tomorrow on Rated G Radio, we're going to be back at a special early show. This early edition kind of thing is kind of fun. We may have to do this more often, but we're going to have psychic Sue Davey calling in live from the United Kingdom. And she'll be taking listener calls. We're also going to find out about her and what makes her tick. So that will be fun. On Thursday's Rated LGBT Radio, I'm always joined by my co-host, Mr. Rob Watson. We've got a twofer once again. I don't know how this is happening, but Thursdays are just kind of going crazy with everybody wanting to be on. And we're honored to have Mr. Scott Fullerton. He does his own podcast called Left of Straight, both on the UBN Network and then also right here on the Blog Talk platform as well. He's going to be our guest in segment number one. And Thursday we'll have Mr. Greg Archer. He is a best-selling author. He is a former editor. He's also been a former year-long contributor to Rated G Radio as the pop culture guru. But he's coming on to talk about his new web series called The You and The Me. So we're going to be joined by Greg on Thursday. And Friday, on the Friday dance party, we're going to have Jennifer Galonia. I don't know why I have such a hard time with her name, because I never have a hard time until I look at it to say it, and then it's Jennifer Galonia, and it just screws me up every time. But she's with the Ron Retzer Trio. It's a Christian music group. They have a brand new CD called Being Happy, and we're going to do the world premiere on radio of their album at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on the Friday dance party. I say that because we're usually at the Friday night dance party, and we can't wait for that. If you're listening to us on Chat and Spin Radio or Westar Radio in the UK today early, thank you for tuning in. It's always a pleasure to have you as part of the fun and festivities. So without further ado, I want to bring Dr. Frank onto the show and welcome him to the program for the first time and hopefully for many more in the future. Dr. Frank, how are you today?
I am fine. Thanks for having me today.
I am so
excited. How are you?
I've had a cup of coffee because it's even though it's 8 o'clock, I needed to be
it's
up
early.
It's early for, you know.
For you,
great.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I need to give big shout-outs to the 6 degrees of separation from Kevin Bacon that always connects the guests to the show. So I want to say
Yes. Thanks
to Tony G and Hackensack for connecting.
Yeah, great guy.
He's great. And he's actually listening in. I think he's commuting somewhere. So he said, can I listen on the phone? And I said, yeah, just call in. And that's what a lot of folks do. Anyway, so Dr.
That's
Frank,
terrific.
This is our first time to visit with you. And so since our listeners haven't heard your voice and your story before, can you tell us a little bit about who you are?
Great. I'm a licensed New Jersey psychologist in Ridgewood, New Jersey, and I've been doing that for over 20 years, and time is really flying by, and I enjoy my work very, very much. I work with kids and adolescents and adult patients as well. I like the variety of working with different age populations. Sometimes I'm doing play therapy on the floor with kids, or I'm just talking to someone about the problems they're having with their relationships or their jobs. So it kind of creates a good balance for me. I'm an author of 5 upcoming 6 books, children's books, on a variety of topics. And I speak across the country on lots of different things. I speak locally to schools. I speak locally in libraries. In a past life, I was an actor, so I get that opportunity to be in front of people and making psychology and things about life a little bit come to life a little bit more for them. So, and I enjoy doing things like this, podcasts and different things to bring awareness to different issues through mediums like yours. And I appreciate you having me
good.
Giving me a platform.
So, okay, so you have gone from an actor to a psychologist to a children's author. How do you make such a huge transition from, you know, the creative to something that I think would be very difficult to do, but clearly you're an expert at it and you love it, to doing something that's creative with your time? How did that process take place?
Well, actually, in between becoming an actor or being an actor, I was also studying to be a priest. And then
what?
I left the priest. Yes, yes.
Wow.
So I was studying to be a priest for about a year and a half and, felt, you know, that was where my path was supposed to be, and always studied psychology because I thought, you know, psychology would go great with being a priest, helping others.
Sure.
And just decided the three vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience weren't for me. So decided to pursue being a psychologist full-time, going from undergraduate school into graduate school right out of college. So I was really young at the time and, you know, got my PhD in 6 years. And at Fordham, I went to Fordham University in New York City. And at the time, I was the youngest graduate in their doctoral program. So I guess I was the Doogie Howser of psychology back then.
Oh, my gosh.
And, yeah. So which was hard when you start working with, you know, people twice your age and they're looking at you like, how can you help me? you know, but, you know, I may not have had the life experience, but certainly can identify with feelings that people have, you know, whatever they may be. And then somehow the creative piece, you know, has always been in me. I mean, I think that's why I do talks. That's why I, you know, write books. I'm always looking for creative tools to help my patients, whether it be game playing or, you know, reading books or writing books. So I think the combination of actor, you know, everything that I've been through or the experiences I've had, I think this is maybe true for lots of us, that we can bring that forward in some way and use it and, you know, to our enhance our lives, our careers, or whatever.
So when you, I mean, when did it hit you that, boy, you know what, I need to sit down and write a children's book?
Well, you know, I use a technique in child psychotherapy called bibliotherapy. What that means is you read a book about a particular topic to a child, and it's a, you know, it helps them to see the problem, talk about the problem, and allows them to, it validates their thoughts and their feelings. And usually the books typically, you know, give a lesson or tools to solve that problem or to cope with that problem. So one day I was, you know, reading books to kids, and I work with a lot of kids and adults with gastrointestinal disorders, specifically Crohn's disease, which I have. And I was working with a young person one day, and I was reading her a book on anger. She was very angry about being sick. And she said to me, Dr. Frank, how come there's no book for us on Crohn's disease? So it just started me to get to think, you know, started me thinking, and I was like,
sure.
No, there isn't. I searched, you know, around, and there was really nothing out there for kids, you know, that affect about, you know, over 200,000 kids in the United States alone.
Wow.
How can I help them? So I wrote this book, my first book, Toilet Paper Flowers, for them, to help them feel okay about themselves, that, you know, they can use this book to share with their friends and family, that if their friends think, ooh, I could catch this from you, it kind of takes away the myth that, you know, you can catch it, you're not going to die from it, and that you're okay. And the message of that book is hope despite adversity, because Julia, the main character in the book, creates these flowers out of toilet paper when she's experiencing gastrointestinal distress. And the flowers remind her to keep her body healthy and to keep a positive attitude and keep a fighting attitude toward the disease. So that was really the beginning, setting me off. I never thought I would write books. I mean, I've done some research in my undergrad years and I've published
sure.
in professional things, but I never thought of writing books. And I think, you know, niches or things in our life just come sometimes calling to us, and we just have to hear it, and then how we choose to respond to it is another thing. So I chose to respond to that. And so started me in 2005, I wrote my first book, and I've had the writing bug since.
Okay, now I want to talk about your writing extensively, but I'm going to – I really don't know what Crohn's disease is. I see ads on TV that you want to go and talk to your doctor and do this and do that and the other thing, but without really any, you know, formal research on it. Can you tell us in layman's terms what that does to kids or people? And okay.
I've had it since my early 20s, but I'm older now, but I've had it since my early 20s when I started graduate school. And basically, it is inflammation from your mouth, can be found from your mouth to your rectum, that causes, you know, running to the bathroom or bowel issues, can cause tremendous pain, can cause uveitis, which is a skin condition. It can cause development of kidney stones. You get joint pain for children. It delays their sexual development and their growth. And so I appreciate you asking about it, because oftentimes just think it's just about, you know, going to the bathroom, and no one wants to talk about that. You know, in our culture, you know, we have a lot of potty humor. And for Crohn's and colitis patients, which are under the IBD, inflammatory bowel diseases, they struggle. They could struggle every day. I mean, I have patients who can't work or can't go to school or, you know, are not functioning. They feel nauseous every day. So it's not always about just bathroom use. And I appreciate you asking, because when the media often responds to it like, well, that's not a sexy disease, we don't want to talk about that. And I'm like, well, I don't know any disease that's sexy.
Right.
But I understand, you know, that from a PR, and I understand from a marketing perspective, you know, if Angelina Jolie had, you know, Crohn's, I'm sure they would tell her to have another disease. You know, no one wants, well, maybe some people might want to picture her in the bathroom. I don't know if they're into that kind of thing. But, you know, it's not something that people talk about. And, you know, for me as a psychologist, part of my mission is to, you know, in my practice and when I get asked to speak across the country, is to say, you know, I have this disease too, and here I stand in front of you, and, you know, I have difficulties too, but you could still have, you know, provided medication, provided if you need, you know, surgical removal part of your colon, you could still live a healthy-ish and, you know, fulfilling life for yourself. You don't have to, I often tell my patients, the disease is part of you, not, you are not the disease. So
are there things that trigger Crohn's disease?
You know, they think it's found in mostly Ashkenazi Jews. I'm not Jewish. They believe there's a genetic component to it, a family history of it. I don't know any of my family that has it. So, although, again, lots of things get undiagnosed in families. You know, my
sure.
grandparents may have just been like, oh, he has a weak stomach, you know, as opposed
right,
to
right.
he had something more serious. Dr. Crohn started, you know, this long ago, and the Crohn's Colitis Foundation of America began in 1967, which is interesting. That's the year I was born. So it's relatively, and I'm glad to hear that you see it on television, because, you know, people need to know about it, and we're seeing more and more people.
But they don't ever really talk about what Crohn's disease is or what it. It's like, you know, it's like all those pharmaceutical commercials. Talk to your doctor about the little blue pill, but it never tells you what the little blue pill is. It just says,
right,
go talk
right.
to your doctor.
Or, you know, gotta go right now. Like
right.
you know, the one with the urinary issues.
Right. Right.
Gotta go could also apply to Crohn's and
yep.
colitis, because
yeah.
you gotta go. When you got to go. So I try to say to everyone, you know, my experience of Crohn's, or people's experience with Crohn's, is like, imagine you're at a restaurant and you eat, I don't know, you have oysters or you have fettuccine Alfredo that's incredibly rich, and all of a sudden you start to get the sweats. And
yeah.
you're like, uh-oh.
You know.
And then you go to the bathroom, and, you know, as you're going to the bathroom, you're like praying that, one, that the stall is open, two, that no one's in there, and you just pray to, you know, to God that you're going to like make it. And that for many patients with Crohn's,
wow.
that's like on a daily basis of that feeling of, oh my gosh, I have to get to the bathroom.
That is horrible.
Yeah. It could be humiliating and embarrassing, and I always tell my patients to create like a kit, like, you know, go in whenever you go anywhere, bring rubber gloves, toilet paper, Lysol spray, you know, just to make a bathroom experience a little bit more, you know, because as we know, public restrooms, you know,
yeah.
aren't always clean,
exactly.
and they're
yeah,
not always
yeah.
accessible.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, Crohn's Colitis Foundation has been fighting to get people to, you know, show that they cannot say, we won't let you use our bathroom. In Europe, when I was in Europe, they were so relaxed about bathroom use. I mean, I think they just view it as drinking water. It's like, this is natural. You're human. You go to the bathroom. In America, we're a little bit more, you know.
We're weird.
Yeah, we're kind of like, you know, don't understand it. I mean, I stopped a plane once from taking off because I was on my way to give a keynote speech about Crohn's, and I'm on this plane and we're delayed to begin with, and I have to, you know, I'm having an attack, and I stopped the plane from taking off. So, you know, it's important for people to advocate whatever disease, if they have a disease, to advocate, educate people about what that is. And, you know, get the help and the knowledge you need to make yourself comfortable. But, yeah, I stopped a plane from Cleveland, you know, from Newark to Cleveland once. And, I mean, as, you know, as I'm in the facilities, I'm thinking the whole plane is going to, when I get out, they're going to, like, be screaming at me, you know, like,
right.
Oh, my gosh, what are you doing? Like a Seinfeld episode or something, you know. And
what happened?
Well, they stopped the plane and I, you know, was okay. And I, you know, I was sitting as we're taking off. I'm like praying and saying like, why are you know, I'm going to like inspire people or help
right.
people with this disease.
But
how
ironic,
what, Garrett,
you know? Yeah.
What do you think the opening of my keynote speech was? That
guess
experience.
What happened to me? Yeah.
So I hope from that experience, I was able to you know,
maybe you
impart
needed that
to other people
for that.
Yeah, I would have preferred it maybe if it happened at home before, you know what I'm saying? Not on a plane of angry, you know, people. And it's, you know, it's not always comes at convenient times. So
no.
I guess, you know, you use what you've got, and I use it as the start of my keynote. And maybe it inspired other people to that not to be ashamed or to ask for what they need.
You know, but you know, just having you share that story with us, I mean, that would be, that's going to be the memorable story. And, you know, well, we've got 45 minutes left. There's probably lots of memorable stories you'll share, Dr. Frank. But I'm going to remember when I had Dr. Frank on, he told me about when, you know, he is an expert at this and this stopped the plane. But, cause, I mean, that is a perfect example of what it does to folks. And so I'm grateful that you would be comfortable enough to share that with us. So, you know, I have so many things I want to
ask. And for your early readers, I mean, early listeners, excuse me, I'm like, you know, we're talking about this stuff and I hope they're not having their breakfast at this point, but you know, maybe someone is, and sometimes the mornings are worse for people. So if they are listening, I hope they're feeling, oh, okay. You know, I can get through this.
Well, and I'm also one of those people that I'm never grossed out about anything. We could talk about any subject at any time, and I could be eating a plate of whatever at the same time, and it doesn't ever faze me. I don't know why that's the case, but you know, so hopefully, listeners, you're all okay with that. So getting back to the writing, what was your process like when you, you know, as a writer and having, you know, you've read children's books, two kids, you've, you know, seen how it works, and so you get ready to write this book about Crohn's disease for kids. Did you have to set aside certain times of your day? Did you give yourself a deadline? Did you kind of know what kind of the plot was of, you know, how the story would progress? Can you tell us about that?
Sure. It kind of just unfolded organically. I don't really – I try – Tuesdays are my days that I typically write, but sometimes when, as a writer, when you force yourself, or even maybe another kind of artist, if you force yourself to create art – at a specific time, and sometimes it doesn't fit. So sometimes the moment, I mean, I traveled back and forth to work, so a lot of my, I think a lot in the car, or because I have Crohn's disease, I also think a lot in another room in my house. So
sure.
My process is, and I always have a pad with me, or I'm on my iPhone, you know, putting in my notes section, something might hit me. You know, I'm an old-fashioned kind of guy. I write out my books by hand, and versus on a computer. So I just, you know, use that to kind of, you know, and I don't try to stop the process. I just write and write and write, because I always tell my kids and any other, you know, authors out there, like, that's what editors are for. Just keep writing and don't editorialize yourself in the very beginning, because you can get stuck in that. Just write and free associate and just let your mind and creativity just kind of flow a little bit. Because we can also be very judgmental and hard on ourselves about whatever we're doing, whether it's writing, whether it's drawing, whether it's playing piano or whatever. We can be very, very hard on ourselves. So I tell my process is just kind of let it go.
I was going to ask you, you know, do you write on a computer or do you write on a pad? You know, when I write, I find that if I really want to retain it, or if I really want to have more of a creative flow, I have to write it on a piece of paper. And that frustrates me, because I always write in cap. I went to drafting architecture college years and years and years ago. So I write everything in capitals. I write in block letters. I do all of it. And so I can write fast, but I'll tell you, creatively in my head, my brain's going 1,000 miles an hour and my hand's writing at about, you know, one. But I love that, you know, because I retain it, I get it, and all of that. At what point, even though you have an editor, do you go back and say, okay, now it's time for me to, you know, do a little self, you know, editing on this before I send it off? Otherwise, they're going to think I'm nuts.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, before sending it to the publisher, certainly you want it to be your best, you know, grammatically correct. I've had other people, you know, read my work. I've read it to kids without them knowing it was mine, and getting feedback from them as far as, like, you know, what do you think about this? You know, with kids' books, you know, simple, brief, you know, is better than sometimes very, you know, because you want to write and get everything in there to help the reader, but it loses something. The illustrations really kind of help that along to make, you know, the book come alive. So you may not have to write, you know, Joey looks surprised. You know, you could, right. You know, the illustrator's job can make Joey look surprised and don't have, it's kind of there for the child or the parent to look at. So
do you, when you got ready to write the book and you got the book done, did you have an illustrator in mind for this? Did the publisher come up with that for you? How does that process work?
That process works by, I've been very fortunate that I've had two publishers for my books. And they've been wonderful as far as, you know, opening up, you know, they've suggested illustrators, but then I've done my own research on who I think might be fit the book. Because every book has a different theme or feel to it. So sometimes you want more cartoon-like drawings, or you want more realistic drawings, or you want animals to have more human characteristics than whatever. So I had some ideas of some illustrators, and like I said, I've been very grateful to my publishers that allowed me input. And, you know, the ones that I've suggested, they've agreed to. And it's great, because that is one of my favorite parts of writing children's books is working with the illustrator. And sometimes I don't talk to the illustrator. You know, like they might ask, like,
really?
What do you want this character to look like? Yeah. My first three books, I had a lot more contact with the illustrator. My last two and my future one next February, I didn't really have much discussion with them. I did have discussion of, like, how I wanted certain things to look, and they – you know, my publisher is very generous in showing me the rough sketches, and I would say, no, I think this person should be, you know, have blonde hair or whatever. And they try to incorporate my vision into the book, which is wonderful. And one illustrator told me that I made her job very easy because I had a very clear vision of what I wanted, you know, the characters to look like, be like, expressions, et cetera, et cetera. So, but they are equally a part of the book as, you know, I am as of writing it. And I've worked with some great, great illustrators, so I've been very fortunate.
So your first book is called Toilet Paper Flowers, and by the way, everybody who's listening today, there is a link on the show page that takes you right to Dr. Frank's Amazon page. It just says buy his books on Amazon, click here. You click the here word and it's going to take you right there, and you can buy all of them today. So, you know, if you've got birthdays coming up, or, you know, what would be some great events that people would want to buy your books for, just besides having them in their library?
Well, certainly, Valentine's Day is around the corner. It's a great gift for kids. And again, the themes on my books, the first one's on Crohn's disease. The second one is on helping kids understand lactose intolerance and really about being different, but also people understanding that people aren't all the same and that they may eat or, you know, have to have different things. My third book, Bug Bites and Campfires, is a book for kids who have homesickness, which is basically like separation anxiety. So it's not necessarily related. It takes place in a camp where a lot of homesickness occurs, but also they may experience homesickness on sleepovers or going to grandma's house or going to a friend's house, or your child may be struggling with some separation issues. So that book is for that. Sally Sore Loser teaches kids to be not only good winners, but also good losers, because we find there's a lot of bullying with sore losers. The one after that is Don't Put Yourself Down in Circus Town. It's a story about self-confidence that teaches kids not to engage in self-deprecation. I'm stupid. I'm a loser. I'm no good at this. And give up right away. And with building self-confidence, we need to practice over time, and we need to engage in positive self-talk. Like, you know, it's okay to make a mistake, and, you know, you know, keep trying and persevering in what you're doing. So depending on, you know, if anyone's listening, you know, and those books kind of speak to them, I think that that can make a great Valentine's Day gift. I think it can make a great, you know, Passover's coming up, Easter. I think a book is great at any time of the year. And some of them are on Kindle. I prefer a hardcover book, just especially with kids, to hold it, to turn the pages, go back, mommy, and let me look at that picture again. And so, you know, I think, you know, depending on what your child may be dealing with or coping with, and even if they're not, I mean, I think it's just great to have on the library in your home or in your school or in your religious community or whatever, just to have there as a resource.
Well, you know, and you bring up a great point, you know, because just because you don't have Crohn's disease or just because you're not lactose intolerant or just because whatever, you know, how many books did we read as kids, you know, going back that had, you know, circumstances or events that we didn't really relate to, but it was the story, you know, and so you
yes.
get that understanding. And so when you run into people, you know, that can't eat cheese, it's not like,
mm-hmm.
What? You can't eat cheese? Well, you just read a
right.
book about it. You've been reading a book about it for the last 5 years. Now you understand why.
Right. And each book is a note to parents and caregivers. So in the back of the book, it educates the parent or caregiver or the therapist or the librarian or whoever, the teacher, to how to use the book. So when your kid comes to you with such and such problem, how do I address that problem that's also in the book? So it gives them a guide to helping them foster the skill, the theme of the book, the moral of the story even further. So that's and APA, Imagination Press, the American Psychological Association, their children's imprint, have done my last three books, and they are very, you know, very, feel very strongly about having that note in there so that caretakers can use the books appropriately and help kids. That it's not just like go and read the book on your own and have fun. It's like maybe it should be read together and then discussed.
I think that's and speaking of discussion, I think now is a great time to take a quick commercial break. We're going to hear from our friends at It Matters Radio and Rainbow Brew. We're going to be back in 2 minutes and 30 seconds. So if you need to, you know, make a quick run anywhere, you can certainly do that. And we'll be right back after this with Dr. Frank.
Welcome to our discussion of It Matters Radio. Our guest today is Angus McWilliams.
Hey, laddie, let's get on with this thing. I'm on my way to a birthday party for Nessie.
You're throwing a birthday party for the Loch Ness Monster?
Well, first of all, it's not a monster. And second of all, I'm talking about niece Nessie. She's a wee bit of a lovely lass.
I see. Well, okay. Angus, can you give us your thoughts on It Matters Radio?
Hey, wonderful people. They had me on a while back to talk about my book.
Your what?
My book. I wrote a book about the adventures in Scotland.
Oh, I see. A book.
That's what I just said. What are you, deaf man?
It Matters Radio focuses on discovering new talent and bringing important indie artists on the air. Monica, Kenneth, and Carrie offer up meaningful conversation on new music, books, and fun topics. It's unlike any other radio program known to man and woman alike.
You can say that again.
Known to man and woman alike.
Just because I said you can say it again doesn't mean you have to say it again.
I'm just doing my best to show everyone that It Matters Radio basically brings variety, fun, and entertainment with a sincere desire to discover new topics and talent.
Oh, why didn't you just say that?
I just did.
Hey, laddie, remind me when I can listen.
It Matters Radio is on every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific.
You Americans with your different time zones. We only have one time zone in Scotland.
And that would be...
That would be the time to down a pint or two of ale.
It Matters Radio, for the best in conversation, music, books, and entertainment. Join us Thursday evenings at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific. Discover the depth, diversity, meaningfulness, caring, guest-focused, friendly, enjoyable atmosphere of It Matters Radio with Ken, Monica, and Carrie.
That's a mouthful if I have a hard one.
Yes, and I'm going to go brush my teeth now. It Matters Radio.
When it comes to coffee, freshness is queen. That's why Rainbow Brew believes you should have the freshest coffee, roasted to order in small batches and delivered to your door within a couple days. Whether you're purchasing for a coffee shop, restaurant, or home, Rainbow Brew is your one-stop shop for fair trade and organic coffee. Offering many unique blends, including AM 950's own Blue State blend. That's Rainbow Brew, the Queen Bean, a proud sponsor of the Morning Grind. Online at rainbowbrew.com. Brew something good today.
I love Rainbow Brew. That's actually what I'm drinking this morning. They're out of Minneapolis, St. Paul, and when they came to me and said, you know, we want to be part of the Rated G Radio experience, I said, You grow coffee beans in Minnesota. How in the world are you going to have anything that tastes halfway decent in the frozen tundra? And so they sent me a bag of it. Now I'm a big fan. If you go to the Rainbow Brew Facebook page, they'll often have coupons that you can use at checkout for some discounts. And, of course, if you tell them you heard them here on, you know, Rated G Radio, they will actually do a happy dance in their shop before grinding your coffee and sending it out same day. So go check them out. It's a small business, an LGBT business, and I'm a big fan of supporting small business around the country or wherever you can. You know, again, it's independent artists, musicians, authors, filmmakers, coffee makers, you name it, we want to help out where we can. Big business gets enough money as it is. That's my little soapbox speech for the day. We're joined today by Dr. Frank, and he is talking about his children's books that he's written and received recognition from. He's, by the way, since 2010, he's been consistently voted one of New Jersey's favorite kids doctors by readers of New Jersey Family Magazine, and that's quite an accomplishment because getting kids to come to a doctor has to be like pulling teeth. What is that? What's your experience?
You know, I think they do like me better than the dentist. You know, pulling teeth or whatever. Yeah, they do like me better than the dentist for sure. In fact, I like, you know, I'd rather, yeah, the dentist is not my favorite. Sorry if any dentists are out there, but just had a crown put in and like not fun. And it's really not their fault, you know, but he helps, so he's cool. But I think that, you know, kids are, and we're in New Jersey here, my experience has been that, you know, it's a mixed bag. Some kids come on their own volition, and some kids are either asked to come because of schools, their parents, and, you know, it's sometimes difficult for them to be in therapy. It's amazing to me, though, when a young person comes to me and is so motivated and so wanting to talk to someone about their stuff, which, you know, speaks volumes to me about, you know, the needs out there for young people today. I have lots of kids in my practice who are bullied and lots of kids in my practice struggling with identity issues and struggling with a whole host of family stuff. And so, you know, I work not only with the kids, but I also work with the parents because they live with them. I'm only with them for 45 minutes a week. But, you know, some of them can be, you know, very resistant. And my job as a psychologist to use my interpersonal skills and try to reach them and talk to them in ways. I have a kid right now who's, you know, very somewhat resistant to therapy, but is a huge Star Wars fan, but and love the fact that I called him my Padawan, which means in Star Wars lingo that he is my student and I'm the master Jedi. And we talk, you know, about Star Wars all the time, but I try to, you know, use it as a metaphor for his life and, you know, trying, not, you know, there's, I think Yoda said, do or do not, there's no such thing as try. And so this kid has really kind of come around in my office as far as, you know, being, enjoying coming because, you know, we talk about Star Wars and indirectly we're talking about his life or the struggles he has. I also use a lot of play therapy, puppets and Legos and in addition to the books and games, board games, some therapeutic board games, but also regular board games. So I love that kids love board games. It's, you know, because it's such a, it seems like a kind of dying thing. You know, everyone's into video games today. And, you know, I realized that, you know, everyone in my practice used to say, oh, Dr. Frank, you're so young. And I'm very appreciative. They're always my favorite patient. And the other day I was playing Trouble with this boy. And I said, this was my favorite game when I was a kid. And in all seriousness, Garrett, he looked at me and he said, they had it back then?
Oh, my God.
I have now crossed over that line of, you know, not looking in my 30s anymore. So I'm like, okay, good one. And he was totally serious. He wasn't like trying to be a wise guy. He really was genuine. I mean, kids are genuine. I mean, that's the thing about working with kids. They will tell it like it is. They will just... And sometimes such wisdom comes from them. That's why I enjoy working with them, because they're also so sometimes open and receptive to a mentor or role model in their life that they can talk to other than their parents, or sometimes they don't have their parents to talk to. But sometimes it is, you know, a challenge, and, you know, a psychologist's job is to use their interpersonal skills to kind of meet, find out what their melody is and sing it along with them. And that's our job to some degree, to get them engaged in therapy.
I remember years and years and years ago, my parents were having some issues and they wanted me to go to counseling and, you know, do all of that. And I flat out said, you can't make me go and I'm not going to go. And I didn't. And, you know, and I look back at that going, you know, what was I so afraid of, or, you know, what was I thinking was going to take place? But, you know, I'm not really sure what was going through my head other than I just was, you know, defiant that, you know, I'm just not going to go. You know, when you get kids in who might be in a situation where they don't really want to be there, how do you break the ice with them and get them to kind of warm up?
Well, I initially have an intake with the parents, so I always ask them, like, what are their interests? What are they into? Are they into baseball? Are they into video games? Are they into whatever it is? And so I try to join. And the first session isn't like, so I heard you're depressed, or I heard you wet the bed, or I heard you. So I stay away from that. You know, that's inevitably for anyone. It'd be like, oof, you know, like, wow, that like just hit me over the head. So rapport building can take some time, and, you know, you try to join them and get interested in what they're interested in. And I think, you know, being, you know, a psychologist has to be genuine. The research has supported this, that if people don't feel that you're being a genuine person, they're not going to come back. You know, they may feel you're too robotic or too analytical or too judgmental. And my job is not to judge people. I always say, you're the expert in you. I'm the expert in psychology. Together, let's figure out a way to work on this, because I don't want you on my couch forever. You know, and you have to walk in those shoes, not me. I have my own shoes to walk in, but maybe I can help you. Or sometimes I'll use the metaphor like, listen, you're in the driver's seat. I'm going to be the backseat driver, but I'm not going to be annoying. I promise. And maybe I'm just going to say, have you considered turning right here? Just think about it. You know what I'm saying? So I try to empower them, because people come to therapy feel very disempowered. I mean, I think going to the doctor, any doctor, the dentist, you feel this sense of, oh gosh, I have no control here. I'm out of control. So I try to give them control. It's their life. They're asked for the time, or sometimes they haven't asked for the time. But try to empower them that they're okay, that they're not alone. I mean, I think kids feel so alone and isolated, whether it being, you know, gender issues, whether it be health issues, whether it be I just feel like I'm ugly or unattractive or no one likes me. They feel like they're the only ones in the world that feel that way. And I try to stay away from, well, when I was younger, because now that trouble was way back when, you know, I'm older, you know, 48, and, you know, like, I'm such an old guy. But, you know, in fact, it's nice when I come out and the parents say, oh, I was expecting the short, fat, bald guy. I'm like, oh, well, I'm glad. I'm glad I can. Yeah. I hope I didn't, you know, disappoint you that I'm not that. But so anyway, it takes some time, it takes some patience, and it takes using – I always tell – I supervise doctoral students from Fairleigh Dickinson University in New Jersey, and I always tell them the first day of supervision, your best tool that you will always bring into the room is yourself. I don't care if you study Freud, if you study cognitive behavioral therapy. I don't care what theory or practice you do. Ultimately, your best tool is yourself. Because you can just be applying, you know, practical tools, and it just feels more robotic, or, you know, not very real or very personal. So your best tool is yourself. And I think a lot of people could probably, apply that to their own careers, not just psychology.
Well, I'd hope so, because I think people, when they're authentic and they're present, you know, you just see it a mile away. And I don't know. I'm a big fan of folks that, you know, aren't, you know, super, super fakey and, you know, cardboard. Mm-hmm. Question for you. When you have somebody in here, because I always see, like, on TV, and I always think of, like, a Woody Allen film where people are in therapy for, like, 40 years and never get anything solved in their life. And I'm thinking that has to be just, like, you know, the therapist's dream. Well, you know, the cash cow is, you know, has come in. We've got this person.
Their retirement plan.
Their retirement plan. They're the annuity. Oh, the Garrett came in. The annuity is finally here. So do you have, like not really like, okay, you're going to be here for 12 sessions and then you're going to be cured, but do you kind of have general ranges that you would expect that, you know, a patient would come in and say, you know, I've got this issue or that issue and, you know, fix me up? What does that usually entail?
It depends on the problem and it depends on the person. Anxiety disorders or other kinds of things sometimes are more amenable to shorter-term forms of therapy. But it also depends on the person. They may not do homework assignments in between sessions, or they may not be full, like, they may just look at therapy as, all right, this is my therapy, and then they walk out the door and they're not working on or thinking about anything that we've talked about, and then thinking about it maybe in the waiting room the following week before I open up the door to bring them in. Therapy is more than 45 minutes a week. It's part of something you have to cultivate. But I don't, there's no cookbook approach. Like, okay, you have a phobia of spiders. That should be 12 sessions. Or,
right.
you know, you're struggling with this divorce. I mean, I don't like to keep people, like I said, too long on my couch because I don't want people to become dependent upon it. I also want them to give it a whirl and kind of fly out my door and see where you go. And you're always welcome back. And, you know, that's happened over the years. In 20 years, I've seen kids when they were five, and now they're coming back in middle school or high school because life presents different, you know, problems
sure.
at different stages and ages.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I haven't yet got any of my children patients to come back and bring their kids to me. So when that happens, then it's like, you know, that's a little, you know, scary. But not, that has not happened yet. But certainly, Garrett, there's no real time frame on certain things.
It's probably just dependent upon the person.
Absolutely. I mean, I've had kids and adults respond very quickly to therapy, and they're, you know, I'm discharging them, and then I have some people that just, for whatever reason, they're just not progressing as fast. I'm not saying they're failing in therapy or
sure.
they're not,
just,
you know, whatever.
Everybody's done their own thing.
Yes.
So how do you know as a psychologist, okay, Garrett's cured of his fear of spiders? You know, do you have to have him go to a spider farm and have him crawl all over you, or you know what's the, you know, how do you measure the success of your patient?
Well, with kids, it's like self-reported from them. Sometimes they'll
yeah.
tell you like I'm feeling better, I'm whatever, or the parents are telling me like, you know, I had a boy who was afraid to go to Disney World, and we worked on, you know, getting him on the rides, and you know, he went and had the time of his life. He still has other issues to deal with, but that might be a situation. If they came in very specific for something and then we've reached our goal, then we take a moment to pause and say, okay, let's reevaluate. Maybe we go to every other week. Maybe then we go once a month. And then know my door is always open to you. Because it's hard for kids and adults to start over with a new therapist or, you know,
right.
oh, gosh, do I have to tell the whole story again? You know, to know that they could come back is comforting for them, and I get those reports from either the kids, the adult patients, or by the parents will say to me, or the school will tell me, you know, he's doing much better, he's focusing, he's not anxious anymore, he's playing with other kids well, he's been going on a lot of play dates, so he's making friends. Those are the evidence that I ask for that I look for when I speak to parents every week when I check in with them, because little Johnny's not going to always tell me that he hit his sister or that he didn't do his homework or that he is feeling having nightmares or whatever. So I always meet with mom or dad or caretaker and say, how are things going? So we keep a pulse on how treatment is progressing.
I love it. So we've got about 10 minutes left before we're going to wrap up our time today, Dr. Frank. And I want to go back and talk about your books because I could talk to you about your practice all day long and probably for weeks at a time, but that would probably be therapy for me. So we'll talk about that at a different point. But I want to have you here to go into more detail about your books. We've talked about your first book, Toilet Paper Flowers, and is there anything else you'd like to cover on that? But because I'd like to have you spend a little bit of time about each of the other four books that you have out.
Yeah,
right now.
I think that's pretty well covered. I mean, lactose intolerance was kind of an offshoot of Hold the Cheese, Please, which is the name of the lactose intolerance book, was really an offshoot of Toilet Paper Flowers. And I had a lot of patients coming to me again with GI stuff, and they were like, you know, this is really was written at the time when all those different kinds of milks were starting to become popular, rice milk, soy milk.
Yeah.
So, you know, all these alternative products were kind of coming onto the market, which was wonderful, but it kind of coincided with that, which was great because it helped also sell books. I have a lot of kids in New Jersey for Bug Bites and Campfires, my homesickness book. Around April, I had a lot of kids in my practice talk to me about, I don't want to go to sleepaway camp. It's very big here in New Jersey. I don't know in other
really?
Parts of the country how big. Yes, huge, huge, huge
wow.
business. Sleepaway camps and day camps and things like that. I was a Boy Scout and did some sleepaway camp, and 2 weeks was too much for me. But
oh, yeah.
But you know, some kids go away for 8 weeks of the summer, and so you know they're experiencing feelings of homesickness, et cetera. So I developed that book for that reason. And again, I have lots of other kids with separation anxiety. They go on sleepovers. They're afraid. They don't want to stay overnight. They're, you know, so it helps with that issue, as I alluded to earlier. Sally Sore Loser, I wrote because I work with a lot of kids on the autistic spectrum, and many of them are can, and I want to say this as a, you know, overgeneralization, but many of them struggle with losing a game or whatever. And even my kids with ADHD struggle with losing. And so there was really, there was a couple books that were written on being a sore loser. And that's when I went to a different, I went to the American Psychological Association, Imagination Press, and proposed this book to them. And it ended up going on to win the gold medal Mom's Choice Award, which all, you know, awards are great and they're lovely and, you know, wonderful. But if it helps the kids, that's my goal.
Sure.
With toilet paper flowers, I was speaking in Washington in front of the Capitol, not in front of the Capitol, in front of Washington's monument, and they kicked off their walk, and they used the toilet paper flowers that, because it teaches you how to make them in the back of the book.
Oh,
they,
my
like,
God.
They were carrying them throughout the walk, and I was like, this is awesome. And when I give talks to kids on toilet paper flowers, different Crohn's organizations, several kids come up to me and give me a toilet paper flower and say, thank you, Dr. Cilio, for writing this book. I'm like, I'm done. I'm like, I have, you know, that's the best thing that I could ever receive. You know, I mean, like I said, words are lovely but and nice and whatever. But that, when you get that from a kid or a parent thanking you for making a difference in their life, there's nothing like it in the world. So that was awesome.
That is awesome. And then the last book is Don't Put Yourself Down in Circus Town.
Right.
I'll tell you, I think I need to read that book as an adult sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I think
adults could, because we are so hard on ourselves, you know, and, you know, some of us are very self-deprecating. We feel the pressure more and more, and particularly kids with schoolwork, with sports, with, you know, I have kids getting college counselors in eighth grade. I'm like, why are you worrying about this now, you know? And if they don't get into this or they don't get into something, then they are stupid, and, you know, which can lead to other self-destructive behaviors, suicide and drug use and other kinds of things. So I wanted to write a book that addressed the issue of self-confidence, because it's different than self-esteem. And they're like cousins, but they're different. And I wanted kids to learn about don't put yourself down. In the book, I refer to it as you're bullying yourself. And it's not the same as a bully on the playground, but when you start beating yourself up with your thoughts or your words or whatever, you're acting like a bully in a way towards yourself. So I wanted kids to get that message to stop doing that. And also how to fix that, how to engage in more positive self-talk, how to reach out for help, how to do, you know, to persevere despite difficulty. Because we can give up very easily when things don't work out our way. We just like, okay, next, and you know, you're kind of giving up, or you're not giving it a fair shot. So, you know, that book, I love the illustrations in that book are just so beautiful. All of my illustrations are beautiful, but that one is really beautiful because the illustrator Sue Cornelison had to draw a circus, and all the animals and all the characters are all, you know, just so wonderful and so captivating. I think for kids, they just love that book. And my next book on mindfulness, that's coming out in February of 2017, will also teach kids about what mindfulness is, being present to the present, being in the moment, taking a breath. And it's more than just taking a breath, because when we think about mindfulness, we think just, oh, you're meditating and you're breathing and all that stuff. It's a way of living. It's not only just a technique, but it's also a way of living your life for adults and for kids. And studies are showing more and more that mindfulness practice helps with anxiety and depression, and helps. They're using it in prisons. They're using it with athletes. They're using it in schools. Goldie Hawn's foundation, the Hawn Foundation, created a whole curriculum for schools called Mind Up. So there's a lot of great work being done out there in this mindfulness area to help kids, bring it to the school and teach kids to take a breath and close their eyes for a moment and just, you know, be present to your feelings without judging them as good or bad. They just are. So I'm excited about that one coming out in February, but it's just the process of waiting. I have to do some mindfulness work on myself.
But to learn anything about your writing, you know, about yourself through the writing, and you know, that's a perfect example. So, what's your age range or demographic for the books that you're writing? Because, you know, it sounds like it'd be geared towards younger kids, not necessarily a high school junior or senior.
No, they they advertise them on Amazon from 4 to 8, but that's because Amazon makes very kind of strict age ranges. It really can be from, like, you know, 4 through 12, I would say, my books can be used for, because there are some 12-year-olds, even some 13-year-olds. Some 13-year-olds can, you know, can get the message, even though it's a picture book, excuse me, and still get the message and still use it as a discussion. When I do author visits, I usually speak up to, like, 12 years old, and they seem to enjoy the message of the book. I mean, picture books are fun. I still love them. I love them myself.
Well, it's like a coffee table book for, you know, kids. You know, you get a little story
right with
it, some nice pictures. So how long does it take you to write one of your books, and once you come up with the idea?
It could vary. Sometimes, like, it's like maybe a year. Sometimes it could take me a month. It really varies. The process is really waiting to hear back from the publisher whether or not that they want to publish it. And that's no fault of the publisher. They just get inundated. Like, Imagination Press gets about thousands and thousands of inquiries a year for children's books, and they only publish 12 to 14 a year. So
Wow. That's
why my book is only coming out in 2017, because 2016 is already spoken for. So you know, the publishing industry is changing. That, you know, everyone's going to Kindles and things like that, and, you know, the hard books, you know, the paper books are kind of fading away a little bit, which makes me sad. But publishers are, you know, their companies are shrinking, or their publishing houses are closing, which is really sad, I think. But, you know, it could take a year or two before it gets published. And, you know, I just got my edited copy yesterday, and they want it back next Wednesday, so they can get it to the illustrator and then all that stuff. So that whole, it's going to take about a year for it to be, you know, go to the printer, and et cetera, et cetera. So there's some time. And then now we'll work on marketing and PR and all that fun stuff.
So, you know, the business of writing is so much different than the writing itself. Do you enjoy the selling of the book compared to the creative? Okay.
I love doing book signings and actually meeting the people and meeting these kids. And it's amazing, because even some of my patients will come to my book signings and they're looking at me like I'm some celebrity. And I'm like, I see you every Tuesday at 5, you know? And you get my autograph your parents get an autograph of my signature on their bill at the end of the month. But for some reason, they're just so enamored. And kids, I think it's great that kids have school author visits, and they, you know, do that because they get in touch with, and they're so into the series of books and, you know, whatever. But I love doing the PR. I love doing the marketing of it, because no one's going to sell your book except, you know, like you would. I mean, you
right.
have a real vested, passionate, you know, personal maybe interest in that. And, you know, publishers just don't have the marketing teams. They focus on your book, and then they have to focus on the next one that's coming out. So I do a lot of self-promotion, and I enjoy it. I enjoy it very, very much.
You know, I'll also share with you, though, that you actually have a very outgoing personality. You're comfortable speaking in public. You'd be surprised the number of authors that I have on here that say, I love the writing process, but the thing I hate most is having to go out to do any PR for this, because that's, you know, it takes them out of their comfort zone in major, major ways. And I think,
right.
you know, that really spells the difference between authors who are more successful than authors who might not sell as many units, just simply because of, you know, the approach you take to getting out there and, you know, pressing the flesh, so to speak, and you know,
yes.
signing those autographs and getting out there. So,
and here's the thing, you don't write them for the money, you know what I mean? It's not
right.
like, you know, I mean, you know, it's really about, I mean, I write them to help kids, but I mean, it's nice to get that royalty check, but certainly it's not like what, you know, Stephen King, James Patterson, Mary Higgins
right.
Clark, you know, all these great authors, you know, make. So, you know, you have to really kind of do social media and get out there and speak to whoever you can who will listen to you
That's
about
it.
Your book.
It's all selling it, you know. As I think that's one of the biggest misnomers that are out there for anybody who's doing anything creative. Oh, Frank's got a book out. He must be making millions of dollars off of that. And you get your check for, you know, $50 or whatever it turns out to be for selling, you know, your units. And, you know, you say, well, boy, that was exciting. But, you know, you do have to find the other reasons for continuing to do that. And it's something that fills, I think, yourself up first, and then helping other people along the way is always a great thing. But as we get ready to kind of wrap up here, do you have Well, I mean, you have to do something else besides, you know, writing kids' books and having your practice. What do you do for fun?
I love to travel. I love going. I'm actually in L.A. at least once a year. I love to travel to Europe and travel to different cultures and places. And it's sometimes difficult with the Crohn's disease, but I'm not going to let that stop me. I love spending time with my family and friends. Not talking about psychology, you know, like, you know, at dinner parties or whatever. I'm not into that at all. I love, I work out a great deal. I try to keep my body healthy. But, you know, I just got a puppy in September. I used to bring, I used to have a therapy, Karen Terrier, like Toto.
Oh my gosh.
Toto
How
was
cool.
a Karen Terrier. So I had one years ago, and he passed away, and he used to work in my practice for my kids and my adult patients. They loved having a dog there. So I just got – we just, you know, got from a breeder another Karen in September. So he's being trained right now. He's being very quiet in my house, which I'm very grateful for. So, you know, we're training him to – we're training him to be a therapy dog to eventually work with my kids and my adults. And he's awesome. So right now I'm immersed in – you know, dealing with having a puppy is like having a baby and a toddler at the same time. So yeah. It's an incredibly challenging but rewarding experience. So in a nutshell, I just like to kind of take a breath, catch my breath, spend time, experience life. And, you know, I love meeting people and new experiences.
And last question of the day, where would you like, and as soon as you started talking about your dog, my dog Bill comes up and he's going like, pick me up, put me in your lap. Like, got 3 minutes left, Bill, just take a pill. It's the craziest thing. So where can people
find
your
dog? I hope he doesn't have to go.
No, because I've got the door open, so he can go outside and, you know, he's playing games. He just wants to be on the radio with Dr. Frank here today. So where would you like people to stay connected with you and, you know, find out more about you and your practice and all of the good stuff that's going on in your world?
I do have a Facebook page, Dr. Frank Cilio on Facebook. I have specifically geared toward my practice and my books. I'm on Twitter at Frank Cilio. I think it's at Frank Cilio. I think that's – and then my website is www.drfrankcilio.com.
Cool. Right on. Everybody, it's been Dr. Frank Cilio, and go buy his books. He's got 5 that are out there right now, and you'll just have to stay tuned for next year. When your next book comes out, we'll have to get you back on, and we'll talk about that again.
I would love that.
Please, but go buy Dr. Frank's books today. Click the here button. Go buy them all. I always say buy one for yourself and buy 9 for other people. You'll thank me later. And, you know, Dr. Frank,
thank
it's been
you.
A pleasure. Thank you very, very much for being here today. Sure appreciate you.
It's been a pleasure, Garrett. Thanks for highlighting some of these very important issues that I'm hoping your listeners will benefit from. So I really appreciate your
– Oh, my gosh.
Your,
thank you.
And shout out to Tony again for making the connection. Yeah. Thank you very much.
And he just sent me a note on Facebook. He goes, I'm listening on my phone and on the computer. So we're getting a twofer for Tony. There we go. Dr. Frank, thank you very, very much. Have a great afternoon. Okay?
Thanks. Have a great day.
Thank you so much. And so, again, everybody go out and check out Dr. Frank Cilio's books on Amazon. There's a link for them right on the show page. We make it easy for you. Quick reminder, tomorrow we're going to have psychic Sue Davey at 9 a.m. Pacific time, and then the rest of the week just unfolds. Big shout-out to the Academia Music Awards for the recognition I'm getting over Gay Wedding. They're doing a big promo for that song starting this week, so I'll be telling you more about that. But in the meantime, I want to give you the number one song on the hottest new artist charts right now. It is called Sweat and Testify, features Deborah Wilson from Mad TV. You'll remember her from her performances as Beyonce and Whitney Houston. She does a little backup on the chorus here, and it's Sweat and Testify. We will see you live on Wednesday. Have a great day.
Sweat and Testify. Slapping your lips like your house is on fire. Like a Sunday school choir. Saying too much like an auctioneer shant. Sirens are here to put out your rant. Time.
You've been listening to
Rated G Radio.